Mr. Rayner Taylor, yeah. Reel 7. We were talking about your more detailed practical training, which you had when you were at Beccles with the Glamorgan Yeomanry. Did you have any training at all in machine guns while you were there?
Yes, everybody were taught basics on the Lewis gun. Not only the Lewis gun.
What did that start with? How did this start with?
Well, you were shown how to take a Lewis gun to pieces and put it back again. You were trained and shown.
Did you find that easy?
Oh, at first it was about as complicated as this video of mine. But eventually you were trained that you could identify each part by feel.
Or blindfold,
you mean? Oh, yeah. Well, they used to do that. Blindfold. Strip it, put the parts out, and put it together again, blindfolded. That was one of the...
You actually did that?
Blindfold. Oh, yes, yes.
And you could do it?
Oh, yes. Yeah. You couldn't make a mistake, because if you made a mistake, it wouldn't fit. So you were taught to put... they call it stripping a gun. It was stripped in sequence. You take something out so that you could take something else out. And you placed them so in sequence so you could get at them, and that's how you... but then, this wouldn't happen in actual use, because you wouldn't have a blanket to put them on, you know, if the gun ceased firing. There's a stoppage, they call them.
They taught you how to clear stoppages as well.
Yeah, oh, yes, that's... A stoppage was when either... It may be one of the bullets were misfit. Anything could cause a stoppage, and you knew... the gunner knew. And it was his job to clear it. Well, just imagine, during an attack, a gun stops. What a hell of a job for a man to clear a stoppage in the heat of an action. Quite a job, you know. But they were specialists. They were specialists in the Lewis gun. It was a marvellous weapon, you know.
And so you learned this as well, though you weren't...
You learned everything. You had basics of everything. So that at a pinch, you could have taken over a gun.
Did you actually do any... Did they show you what each person in a Lewis gun team did?
Oh, yes. Well,
was it? Could you explain
in your turn... Now, I think there would be five on a gun team.
And what did each one do?
Number one was the man firing. Number two was the loader, whose job it was... Now, a Lewis gun... It was loaded by panniers. It's just like a pan lid. And it spun round as it fired. Now, when you'd finished firing, that pannier had to be taken off a spike. It was number two's job to take it off and put another one on. And it was a sticky job, because they were laid down, usually, laid down. And the gun finished firing, the pannier was empty. He's got to stretch it, and he pick it up and put it on, take it off, and put another pannier on. And that's that. That was his job. And the sequence was, if number one got hit, number two took his place, and they moved up in that way.
So what did number three do?
Well, number three was feeding number two with the ammunition for the gun. And then each one, back to number five, were passing ammunition forward.
Now, would they fill the panniers, or were the panniers ready?
No, that was one of the things. That was one of the jobs that were given to troops when they were out of the line.
Filling panniers.
I think they held about 50 rounds. And they used to spin round like that.
Now, you learnt all these jobs.
Oh, yeah.
How did you find the Lewis gun? Did you actually get a chance to fire it?
Oh, I fired the Lewis. Everybody fired it, some time or other.
What were you learning? How did you fire it? What was it like to fire?
Well, you fire it in the same manner that you fire a rifle. You put it to your shoulder, and it says trigger, but at the front of the gun, or near the front, were two legs, because they're heavy things. And you'd open the legs, they would stick them in the ground, and they would support the gun whilst you aimed with it. Now, that was the basic of firing a Lewis gun.
Did it have a kick on your shoulder?
Oh, yes, quite a fair one, too.
What was it like to aim? Was it easy to aim?
It wasn't as accurate, unless you fired a single shot. You would then have time to aim, but I don't think you could get quite as accurate as you could with a rifle.
Was it easy to find a single
shot? Yeah, as long as you kept your finger on the trigger, it fired. The immediate release the finger from the trigger, it stopped firing.
Were you able to do that? Because some gunners couldn't get the control.
You lay down, because often enough, you're firing and don't know what you're firing at.
When you were training, I mean...
Yes. Oh, yeah. In front of you was a huge mound of earth that all the bullets went into there, you know, so it didn't really matter.
Did you like it as a weapon? I mean, would you have liked to have been a machine gunner?
No, I don't think I would. They were heavy to carry, and you had to carry them, you know.
And that's why you didn't like
them? I didn't like it. And the panniers were very heavy. The panniers were carried in canvas slings, and they maybe get two panniers on one, two panniers in one thing, two in another. So in effect, you've got 400 rounds of ammunition on a sling, which is round your neck, and you've got to walk with this. It's quite a job, especially somebody at my build. And nearly all lads were the same, you know. Very unusual.
So that put you off?
Well, that was the reason that put me off. And then I was never chosen. The people chosen for the job were people who showed the greatest aptitude for it. So I wasn't asked. you were detailed, but I was never done that.
Now, did you have any training with gas masks while you were at Beccles?
Yes.
What did that involve? Gas masks
in those days were very, very primitive. In fact, they were horrible. It was just a bag with a mica front. That's all it was. And it was kept in a container, a bag container. And when you put it on, it was impregnated by I don't know what, but it was a sweet, sticky substance that when you put it on, it sort of stuck on your face and it clawed, and you'd got to unfasten your tunic and stick it down your tunic and button your tunic up, you see.
So it was like a hood?
Just like a hood. And when you came to take it off, you felt so unclean, eh? Everything was sticky. Now, those were the containers when I was trained with gas.
Now, how did they train you in it?
Well, you went through what they called a gas chamber. It was like a hut. It could have been anything. It could have been a disused house. It could have been anything. And you just walked through it.
So you had your mask on. And then you walked through. They didn't make you go in and then put your mask on?
Oh, no, they didn't do that.
Were you nervous going in?
Very, very nervous. And then there was some tunnels. You went through tunnels with these. I didn't like it at all. In fact, I never knew anybody that did.
Could you smell when you were in a gas?
Oh, yeah.
Could you smell the gas?
Yeah. Well, you could smell the stuff that the hood was impregnated with. Whether that was gas or whether it was that, I'm not quite sure.
Do you think you could have worn them for a long time?
No, no.
What was the longest you could keep them on?
Well, longest week, if you had them on for 10 minutes, it was long enough. Oh, yeah. You could have worn them longer, but they didn't keep us in that miserable state of affairs for very long. We'd done our gas trading, and that was it.
Did they teach you about the different sorts of gas?
Oh, yes, there was chlorine. I think it was called chlorine, or chlorine, and mustard gas.
And that was what you were learning about in early 17?
Oh, yeah.
What about any training in actual digging trenches and trench life?
Oh, yes.
Did you have that at
Beckles? Oh, yes. You were taught digging, and it was like a gang of navvies. You got picks and spades, and you dug, and it was really, that part was treated as a huge joke, you know, the digging part.
Were you taught to use your entrenching tool?
Oh yes, but you only use an entrenching tool at the very, very last resort, because they're only about this wide, you know. The handle to them. They were very,
did they teach you the proper way to use a pick and a shovel?
Yes. There were, it's quite true, there were people probably who'd never seen them, perhaps lived in a town where we'd never come across anything like that, and they were really. But in the main, you knew how to use a spade.
And how much of a trench would you dig it with the bays? And
yes, in bays. Oh, yes, you do that.
And you dig the full thing?
Oh, yeah. Well, you dig as much as you could in the time allowed. And you weren't digging for dear life, you know. I think we enjoyed those things.
Did they actually teach you to dig a dugout? Or a cubby hole.
No, I never got around to that. I think it was a case of, with them, I think it would be a case of learning as they went on.
What about, did they give you any sort of lectures or training on what it was like to live in a trench, you know, or did...
No, you just...
So that part of things you got when you actually got
into
the
trench? Yes. Oh, yeah. Because usually, when you go in for the first time...
I'll come back to that, because I've led you on a bit ahead there. Yeah. Now, we were talking about these tactical exercises, you know, where you had the division. You mentioned, you know, above you, that they often went wrong.
Oh.
Did they teach you any sort of formations, like artillery formation, attack formation, things like that?
No. You knew you were taken to a certain place, and it was either your job to hold it, or you may get an order to advance so far, and there would be a lot of firing blanks and whatnot. And I never saw any of these.
So they didn't teach you about formations for advancing when you attacked?
Oh, yes. For advancing.
What did they teach you for that?
They used to. The correct method of advancing, showing you how to do it, provided there's no opposition. And if there was opposition, you would still. It would be so instilled into you that that is what you would do. And what it meant was a platoon would be divided into. We'll say four sections of might be 8-9 men. Now, assuming you're advancing and you're meeting opposition. Now, the idea would be for sections to advance and then get down. That's one section. The idea being that as you were advancing, you would draw the fire of the enemy onto you, and by shifting the fire onto you, it enabled the other sections to advance. And they went, they used to call it sectional rushes. And I have taken part in those in actuality, you know.
What, in real life?
Oh, yes.
I'll come back to them. But just one quick comment. Was the training realistic, do you think?
Yes, it was. Yeah.
So the attack formations you were taught were quite useful?
Oh, quite useful, those were.
Were you taught anything else while you were training at Beccles? Did you get any training in signalling, basic signalling?
Well, no, we didn't, but there was always signallers attached to each company, you know. There was always signallers, because in those days there were signals by flags, you know.
Now, a lot of this training, I know you were dismounted cavalry, but you were still cavalry. Now, this training is almost purely infantry training, with the exception of the rides. No mention
at all, except that now and again we did have to ride these bikes. Apart from that, we were trained as infantry.
Right. And did you mind that? Would you have rather had a mounted role?
Well, perhaps. I think we would have liked we'd have a horse. So much so that quite a lot of the lads, they used to get riding breeches. You know, the artillery, you were issued with those, the drivers in the artillery, and they used to acquire these. And when they went on leave, they go home on leave with these and a pair of spurs on. They never seen a blooming horse. But it was just show.
So you were never taught to ride a horse?
No.
There were no horses there?
No horses. I think the colonel had one and the captain had one. But that were all. They'd be their own, you know.
Now, you were the Glamorgan Yeomanry. Yeah. Were you the second line unit or the third line unit of the Glamorgans?
Well, I couldn't say. But There was no Glamorgan Yeomanry in the field as Glamorgan Yeomanry. No, they never operated in the field, not to my knowledge. They did the training as Glamorgan Yeomanry, but immediately were transferred to whatever unit required support, required men. Now, it could have been anywhere.
While you were with the Glamorgans, you were with them quite a long time.
Yeah.
Most of you were from Lancashire, I believe.
No, not most of it. There was just, perhaps, out of a squadron, you might have got a platoon of lads who were from Lancashire.
Were many of them from Glamorgan, though?
The Welsh lads were, well, there was quite a lot from Glamorgan, but the majority of them were Welsh boys.
There were still a majority of Welsh.
Oh, yes.
But they'd come from Priest Heath.
They all came from Priest Heath.
Yeah. They tried to keep Welsh ones. Topped them up with you.
That's a good word, topping them up.
Now, did you have any pride at all in being a Glamorgan Yeomanry? I mean,
not really, because we were made to feel our position. We were foreigners.
How were you made to feel?
Well, they'd speak Welsh in our company when we didn't. To understand a lot of that, don't you? I was on quite a lot of trouble here with Welsh.
What sort of trouble would that cause?
Well, because you always get the impression they were talking about you. Derogatory.
So what would happen?
Oh, well, they'd be around then, you know. And
Did it annoy you when they talked in Welsh?
Yes, although I got very friendly with two or three of the Welsh boys and they agreed, but they said they spoke Welsh naturally. But I think those who did that, English was the second language, so they were perhaps doing us a favour speaking English, you know, I don't know.
Was it like two camps, the Welsh and the English?
No, we were integrated. Oh, no.
No, I mean, when you were within the barrack, I mean, the camp, was there a sort of division?
No, because It was predominantly Welsh. We were very much in a minority, you know, very much so.
But they hadn't joined the Glamorgan Yeomanry, they'd just been drafted.
They'd just drafted in, yes.
So there wasn't much pride in the unit anywhere?
Really? Oh, no.
What about, do you remember any, you said you remembered the colonel's name. What was his name?
He was called Viney. No. Marsham, he was called, Lieutenant Colonel Marsham.
And what was he like?
There again. An elderly man, a Boer War man. Elderly. However, he managed to achieve the rank of Lieutenant Colonel, I don't know, because there was nothing about him that gave you any confidence at all.
Wow,
nothing. He was elderly, and he didn't seem to have a mind of his own. And he was dominated by the regimental sergeant major, who had a very strong personality, and a streak of... now, what's the right word? Sadism, as they call it. Now, what's the right word? What is it?
That sounds about right. So this was another RSM you didn't like?
No, that is the man. This is the RSM.
So that wasn't the one at Priest Heath?
No. It wasn't. Priest Heath man was a father figure. They all were at Priest Heath because they were in...
Including the regimental sergeant major.
Yes, but this Viner was a regimental sergeant major of the Glamorgan Yeomanry. Those at Priest Heath were regimental sergeant major for training reserve battalion.
Because you'd said that the one at Priest Heath wasn't very nice, but you didn't mean that.
I meant the one at...
And did he make life difficult for
you? Very difficult indeed.
In what way?
Well, as an example, I have said that in my younger days I was in the boys' brigade and I could blow a bugle. When we went to the Glamorgans, they asked for people to blow a bugle. They had nobody to blow the calls. And my brother always said, never volunteer for anything. Never. And I hung back. But eventually, I happened to say, perhaps to the corps, I used to be in a bugle band, and of course the word went out, I was sent for. I understand you could blow a bugle. Of course, I have to say yes. There's a trumpet there. They weren't bugles. There again, they used trumpets, which was the cavalry method of calls. Instead of a bugle, the cavalry held trumpets, which are easier to blow than bugles.
Why is that?
Well, I don't know, but they're easier to blow. The longer they're on, they're easier. And I had to give a demonstration. Well, it was no trouble to me. I knew one or two calls. I knew the reveille, and I knew lights out. I knew cookhouse, and I knew letters. Now, that'll get you away with anything. So I was promoted as a trumpeter, not a bugler, a trumpeter.
Were you actually promoted?
No, there was no promotion. They was given that title. And I was excused parades, which was marvellous, because usually the trumpeter or bugler, he mounts guard with the guard, and he has to take his turn, and he's in the guard room all night. Well, because I was the only one, they obviously thought it was unfair. So I slept in my own hut, and the guard would wake me in time for me to blow reveille. And I got away with it like that for quite a long time.
How did you... Some buglers had methods of remembering the calls, you know, sayings. Did you remember any of those?
Yes. Like, cookhouse. He used to say, come to the cookhouse door. You know, come to the cookhouse door. That was that. Letters was they used to say, went something like this. Letter from Lousy Lizzie. Letter with those sorts of things.
Do you remember any of the others? It's a long time ago.
And Lights Out, of course, Lights Out was actually the last part of the last port. Lights Out. And that was how you blew that every night at Lights Out. But I got away with it. I had to get away with it because there was nobody else.
When you went on guard, or had to appear to do your trumpet, did you have to get specially kitted out, smart?
Well, you got on guard. Oh, yes, you must be.
How would you go about preparing your uniform for going on guard?
Well, they had... It was a very... there was a lot of competition between... platoons... because he supplied one man for the guard. Well, so there's four platoons.
What about within? But you're in squadrons here, or were you organised?
Well, they call them. They call those platoons, and you supply a man for the guard. Now, guard mounting, and I've no reason to think it didn't happen in every unit. It's quite a ritual. The guard, they get spruced up, very much so, and the officer inspects them, and they do inspect them because the standard is so great that, button undone, that be it. That was unheard of.
Even while you were training with the Glamorgan Guard, yeah. That was...
Oh yes, you'd have pride in the man who's going on guard, so much so that they always mounted one more guard than was required. And the reason for that was the smartest man on guard, the officer used to tap him, and he stepped back, and they called it. He got the stick. He was the messenger for the following day. He didn't stand guard. That was the smartest man on the guard mounting. Now, this is why a whole platoon would book in to make sure that your man is spot on. And the tricks that was done to make sure your man was good, it's so childish and unbelievable, but it happened.
Do you remember any of them now?
Oh, yes. Acquiring a set of equipment by any kind of means, an extra set of equipment, and doing it up. It was ready done up. It was blancoed to perfection. The brasses were cleaned, and so that the man could put this on, and it was spot on. Actually, he was supposed to use his own and not get himself ready. And When they get this man ready for guard, and it used to happen every night, his boots would be polished. So much so, there was a brass, like where your laces are, there were brass eyelets there. They used to clean those. The caps of the shoes, there was a steel cap. They used to polish the caps of the shoes. And they cleaned under here of the shoes.
What, the sole?
Oh, yes. And the buttons. They, when you turned a man out, he was spot on. So much so, and I've seen this done many a time, that to get your man from the hut to the parade ground where they mounted guard, and it's been, the ground's been a bit mucky, I've actually seen him carried, like a shirt, so that he gets onto that parade ground spot on. But the competition for the stick, it was unbelievable. Now, doesn't it seem childish now? It wasn't then. Very... It was, we took a lot of pride in that.